We have restarted the recording at 10:19. We're under board business and reports. Ms. Hiller, you are present to provide a in-service on practice management supervision.
I am, thank you. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Let me, having rehearsed this, let's make sure this is fine. And I'm hoping you now see my PowerPoint. Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see
it. Okay, we're good with the PowerPoint. Let me set the stage, so to speak, and remind the board, first and foremost, thank you for providing me time on your agenda to share with you a potential education module. It's my hope that the board will consider adopting modules to post on their website that are educational in nature to describe to our therapist and assistant community, as well as the public, what legal expectations are here in Arizona. I presented, I think 2 months ago, a segment that I categorize as practice management, which goes over the details in statute and rules pertaining to renewal of license, use of titles, timetables for activities, disclosure, posting notice, those aspects that I consider to be the management of one's license or certificate. And so this month I'm going to present a module that relates to supervision and use of personnel in patient care management. As I have taught over the last 8 years, jurisprudence to small groups as well as to students, I have tried to collect language from statutes and rules pertaining to particular topics, such as documentation or patient care management, and cluster knowledge of law and rules within these topical arenas. And so the PowerPoint that I'll present to you today is an example for you to consider. Does include citations specific to Arizona law and rules related to the practice of physical therapy. I think it's pretty much verbatim from statutes and rules, other than later in the presentation, and I'll pause then, and it's kind of application of the law. And that would be for you to decide whether you would envision a educational model on the board's website that would include some interactive portion. So unless you have questions in the beginning, we'll see how this goes. Everybody ready? And so simple questions that we would start with related to use of personnel and patient care management would be, what are the physical therapist's responsibilities when delegating care to other people? Who is considered assistive personnel within a physical therapy plan of care? What kind of supervision must a physical therapist provide to other personnel? What must be documented in the patient record related to supervision and use of personnel? Who has the ultimate responsibility for deciding the use of personnel with selected patients? And so I do always begin my teaching giving a context for how to interpret the language we're going to discuss. I think it's important to remember that the law establishes the minimum standards within the practice of physical therapy below which a physical therapist or PT assistant could be in violation of state law with possible penalties if it comes to the board's attention. I think it's important to remember all physical therapists and assistants are held to the same standards regardless of the types of patients they treat or the practice setting in which they work. And in legal terminology, the use of the word shall or must are requirements that must be adhered to by licensees and certificate holders, whereas the use of may in statute or rules implies that it is discretionary and permissive. So an example would be that for each patient, a physical therapist shall perform and document an initial evaluation. It must be done. A physical therapist may delegate activities to assistive personnel, but that is up to the therapist's discretion. A sentence in which a PTA must document care, but may do so without the co-signature of the supervising physical therapist. So the law will dictate whether something is obligatory or whether it's permissive. Certainly, we have to start by identifying for people the language that we are going to be discussing within the entire body of laws, which are called statutes in Arizona. Everything from courts and civil proceedings to insurance laws to traffic to state government. There is one grouping of laws within Title 32 that pertain to the professions and occupations. Within that body of laws under Title 32 is Chapter 19, which is specific language to the Board of Physical Therapy. So any references in the presentation to ARS, Arizona Revised Statutes 32 dash something, means that the language has come out of the law. Sponsored as a bill in the legislature, passed by the legislature, signed by the governor, it's inactive. Within the law, the Board of Physical Therapy, the regulatory body, is authorized to adopt rules which are contained in the Arizona Administrative Code that help interpret or explain the language and statute. Rules cannot be more restrictive than statute, but they can go into greater detail. For example, if the law requires an individual to apply for licensure or certification, it would be in the rules that would describe the specific questions and steps that an individual must go through to obtain that licensure status. And so within the entire body of the administrative code in Arizona is Title IV specific to the professions and occupations. Within Title IV would be the chapter of regulations or rules specific to the practice of physical therapy. That's in Chapter 24. So any citations in the presentation that refer to Arizona Administrative Code R4-24 something, that means the language comes from rules. So I always begin at the beginning, so to speak, in the sections of law that describe definitions of activities, in which the first definition in the law of assistive personnel includes physical therapist assistants. It includes PT aides, AIDES, and other assistive personnel who are trained or educated healthcare providers who are not PTs or PT assistants, but who perform tasks that have been delegated under the supervision of a physical therapist. General supervision is defined in statutes as meaning the supervising physical therapist is on call, we'll discuss that in a moment, and readily available, we'll get to that in a moment, where a PT assistant is providing treatment intervention, whereas on-site supervision means that the supervising physical therapist is on site, is present in the building, is immediately available with some discretion left there to interpret what immediate means, and the supervising physical therapist maintains continued involvement in appropriate aspects of each treatment session. So even definitionally, the supervising physical therapist who is on site does not abandon all patient-related activities to assist a personnel, but rather is expected to maintain continued involvement in each treatment session. So who are these assistive personnel? Physical therapists must meet qualifications for certification under the law that includes graduation from an appropriate school, good moral character, passing of appropriate examinations, and obtaining a fingerprint clearance card. PT assistants can work under either general or on-site supervision of a physical therapist. They must meet the renewal requirements for their certification, which includes continuing competence activities, and they are, as such, independently regulated by the board. You have physical therapy aides or technicians. I tend to refer to them as techs. I speak so quickly, whether I say PTA or PT aides can be hard to distinguish, so I will refer to them as techs during this discussion. Certainly, there's no accredited education for aides. They're trained under the direction of a physical therapist, but there are no entry or maintenance standards for the activities they do. They must work only under on-site supervision. Although aides may be working with a PT assistant for particular patient care activities, the supervisor for an aide is always the physical therapist, the only individual in statute who is authorized to supervise any other personnel. And there is no board regulation of physical therapy aides, other than specifically through regulation of their supervising physical therapist. And then we have the category of other assistive personnel, not PTs or PT assistants, who may be engaged in patient care activities supervised by a physical therapist under a physical therapy plan of care. These individuals may include exercise physiologists, personal trainers, certified strength and conditioning specialists, yoga, Pilates instructor, movement therapists, massage therapists, if they are providing services to a physical therapy patient under the supervision of a physical therapist within a PT plan of care. That's not to say that some massage therapists may be independently licensed by a separate regulatory board and treat patients or individuals appropriately, but within a PT plan of care, under PT supervision, they would then be considered assistive personnel. Students, either physical therapist or physical therapist assistant students, satisfying supervision, supervised clinical practice requirements would be considered other assistive personnel, as would graduates of physical therapist and PT assistant programs who are not yet licensed. Any of those people would be considered other assistive personnel. So the law distinguishes two different types of supervision. I think it's important to know that although there may be some payer policy that determines who may provide what services to individuals, certainly this would refer to Medicare or other payers who might stipulate use of personnel, within our Arizona statutes, there are two kinds of supervision, on-site and general. On-site supervision, as we referred to previously, the physical therapist is present. Rules clarify that means they're present in the building where services are provided to patients or the immediately adjacent buildings. You know, we could quibble about what is immediately adjacent, but the law certainly specifies it has to be within an area where the therapist is immediately available to provide supervision to the assistive personnel providing services, and the supervising physical therapist maintains continued involvement in aspects of the plan of care for each date of service. General supervision means that the supervising physical therapist is not present in the building or an adjacent building, but rather is on call, which the rules describe as able to go to the location on the same day, that would be calendar day, that a PT assistant is providing selected interventions to the physical therapist patient. If it's in the best interest of the patient for the therapist to go to the setting, and the physical therapist must be readily available, which means the physical therapist who's supervising personnel must be able to respond to a communication from the supervised individual within 15 minutes of contact. There is some additional language relating to general supervision that states a PT who provides general supervision to a PT assistant, and only PT assistants may work under general supervision, must be licensed, must respond to a communication within 15 minutes, must go to the location on the same calendar day, and must perform a reevaluation and provide each intervention provided to the patient every fourth treatment visit or every 30 days, whichever occurs first. Also under general supervision, there is language in the rules that describe what a physical therapist assistant working under general supervision must engage with. They must identify and document in the patient record the name and license number of their supervising physical therapist, patient name, date of service, the treatment interventions that were provided that date, and the PT assistant must document whether they consulted with the supervising physical therapist during the treatment visit, and if so, what was described. We're going to elaborate on that in a few minutes. That relates to the fact that there must be communication with the supervising physical therapist at each treatment visit performed under general supervision. So in point of fact, this says whether they consulted, and I would affirm that they must consult with their supervising physical therapist when under general supervision, so they would then need to document that discussion. Any questions at this point? I would have a sidebar discussion to say I'm preaching to the choir. You all are pretty familiar with physical therapist statutes and rules related to the use of personnel.
But I have a question.
A question. Yes.
So I guess this is kind of a general question, and I'm sure all the physical therapists and have observed this. I have a problem when a PT is supervising a PT tech. And in my opinion, they're doing things like with a very complex patient, and there is absolutely no documentation in the clinic by the physical therapist saying that they have tested them on these procedures and they're qualified to treat or do this treatment under their supervision. Any comments about that?
I mean, the comment is, there are gray areas in law that are left to the individual's discretion. And so the choice of use of personnel is something every physical therapist is going to have to stand behind and defend. It's clear from the nature of the complaints come before the board that physical therapists struggle with what their supervisory obligations are and how to document their decision to utilize other personnel in providing services. Clearly, it's my hope that if there's better understanding of what the law requires, there will be more questions that come to board staff about using personnel before they actually make the mistakes. So, you raise the dollar question, Peggy, which is, it ultimately depends on the judgment of the physical therapist who to use to provide services to which patients.
I understand. Thank you for that explanation. I'm sure I'm going to get a big wooden spoon for Christmas.
Hopefully. To be slapping.
Maybe I can clarify further as well. So the first thing is that if a assistant personnel who is not trained like a PTA, they have to identify in the documentation that they have performed the task that they performed that was delegated to them by a physical therapist. The full responsibility of who determines the delegation is with the physical therapist, and the law requires that the physical therapist delegate tasks or responsibilities to individuals that can be performed safely, effectively, and efficiently, and that's right out of statute. So should a complaint come before the board for a intervention that an aide may have provided, then it is the responsibility of the physical therapist to demonstrate that that aide could perform that task effectively, efficiently, and I forgot the third word already, I'm sorry, effective, efficient, and safe. For that to occur.
Can I just add too that there is a difference between routine tasks that you're going to delegate to somebody that's not certified or licensed versus a skilled intervention. You're not going to train a tech to do manual therapy.
However, the law requires the physical therapist to determine what they delegate and to whom they delegate. The law does not limit what they can delegate or to whom they can delegate it.
So just from my own understanding, which I'm assuming I should already know, so when the PT is writing the note about a treatment that a tech really did, are they supposed to put that in?
Go ahead, Peggy.
That's oh, you're talking about the other thing.
I mean, we'll get to that. Your questions are a little ahead of my PowerPoint, and we will get to some of these distinctions. To a certain extent, some of the gray area is because it seems obvious that an aide would do routine physical therapy tasks, but there is no definition in statute or rules of what is a routine task. So once again, that's left to the judgment of the physical therapist to determine what's routine and appropriate for any individual patients. There are guidelines in statutes and rules, and certainly, those guidelines can't answer every question, but there's a little more qualifying language in statutes and rules, which we'll get to in this next section.
All right.
So let's see how it rolls, shall we? I'm trying to respect my 30-minute timetable. Okay, so we're back to statutes, and there is language, and I would, I label this slide use of personnel from the top down because really all of these decisions, who to delegate to, what to delegate, which patients to allow somebody else to provide services to, those all come from the top down. And always it's the physical therapist that is driving the bus. So we will get to the language in law and rules that makes that pretty clear. In statute, the physical therapist is responsible for patient care given by all other personnel. The buck always stops with the physical therapist. A PT may, notice that is permissive, may delegate and supervise selected acts, tasks, or procedures within the scope of physical therapy, but that do not exceed the education or training of assistive personnel. Unlike other statutes in other states where they have lists of certain activities that are considered routine that can be delegated to techs versus other activities that are considered skilled and would only be delegated to specifically trained personnel, there are no laundry lists in Arizona statutes. It's based on education and training. Once again, point out, it's very important to notice that acts, tasks, or procedures are delegated. Patients are never delegated. Those are always the patients of the physical therapist. A PT assistant may perform selected interventions under general supervision. Aides and other assistive personnel must work under on-site supervision, as much must PT and PTA students. Still looking at statutes, PT is responsible for managing all aspects of the care provided to patients. A physical therapist has to provide an initial evaluation and the documentation of that evaluation, periodic reevaluations and documentation, the documented discharge of a patient, including their response to the plan of care, and that the physical therapist must verify the qualifications of assistants and other personnel under their direction and supervision. Statute doesn't say how to verify that. Statute doesn't say that you have to document their capacity to do what you've instructed them to do. Clearly, this is the quagmire that per diem physical therapists and travelers encounter because they're working with personnel they are not familiar with. Those are the gray areas. Statute doesn't explain how to verify those qualifications, but it does expect the physical therapist who is delegating services to know the qualifications of those to whom he or she is delegating. Still in statute, quite clear, for each patient on each date of service, a physical therapist must provide and document all of this intervention that requires their expertise and determine the use of other personnel to ensure that care provided is safe, effective, and efficient. Law is clear, PTA must document care, but they may do so without the co-signature of their supervising physical therapist. and the physical therapist's responsibility for patient services includes accurate documentation and billing of the services provided. It does not explain how the therapist is supposed to know what gets billed for their services if it's done in a health system, but it does definitely establish the qualification that the physical therapist must assume responsibility for that billing. Now we're back in rules that describe for each patient, the physical therapist must perform and document the initial eval, periodic reevaluation, discharge summary. They must ensure that the record is complete and accurate, even for those services provided and documented by other personnel. And they must ensure that services reported for billing is accurate and consistent with information in the patient record, which is certainly what the board looks at when they are deliberating whether somebody has overcharged for services, has misrepresented services, has billed for services not provided. I mean, all of that refers back to this requirement for accuracy in documentation and billing. Also in rules, on each date of service, the physical therapist shall perform and document all the interventions. And here is critical language that occurs in rules, not statute, that describes the decision to delegate services to other personnel is based on patient acuity and the treatment plan. And that standard is huge because patient acuity is a moment by moment status. And so it would be unlikely that a physical therapist who is not present with the patient or present with the patient record could determine acuity from a distance without some kind of engagement with the people who are there with the patient. And so rules are very clear based on patient acuity. There are rules that describe a ratio. Certainly the board is well familiar with. I think it's well understood, but perhaps not appropriately utilized among physical therapists and assistants, that there is a ratio of assistive personnel for whom a physical therapist can supervise. At no time can a physical therapist supervise more than three personnel, and then it's only three people, providing one of them as a PT assistant. The rules further clarify that if you're going to utilize three personnel, one of them must be a PT assistant. No more than two PT assistants under general supervision of a physical therapist. And it reaffirms that assistive personnel other than PT assistants must provide services under on-site supervision. The issue of delegation in statutes and rules is clarified in the rules that distinguish before delegating a treatment intervention to assistive persons, whether on-site or general supervision, the physical therapist is responsible for knowing the qualifications of personnel. And before delegating any interventions to a PT assistant under general supervision, the physical therapist must ensure that the PTA is certified and that the physical therapist assistant has completed 2,000 hours working under on-site supervision in order to be qualified to provide interventions under general supervision. Once again, the law doesn't stipulate how a PT assistant can document those 2,000 hours or verify those hours in that they're qualified to provide services under general supervision. It simply requires that knowledge is present in the minds of the PT assistant and the supervising PT before they delegate to PT assistants under general supervision. The law says a few things about documenting interventions by other personnel. It does specify that for each date that an intervention is provided to a patient, the individual who provides the intervention, whether that individual is a PT assistant a PT tech in a flowchart, a PT student who may be documenting in the record. For each date of service, the individual who provides the intervention has to record the subjective report of patient status, the intervention that was provided, any objective data collected, if that information is collected, any change to the plan of care, and of course only a PT could change the plan of care, any instructions provided to the patient. That standard is set regardless of who's providing services. And then entries made by individuals other than PTs or PT assistants must be co-signed. Any questions up to that point? There is language contained in substantive policy statements that are adopted by the board. The board is authorized to adopt clarifying statements that are contained into their policies and procedures that would help individuals understand how the board is interpreting and reading the language in statutes and rules. The board has adopted many of these over the years, and there are a few of them do relate to use of personnel. First and foremost was a substantive policy statement adopted in 2005 by the board that clarified that graduate physical therapists and physical therapist assistants who are yet to be licensed or certified are considered within the definition of assistive personnel. That delegation to graduates of unlicensed but educated physical therapy personnel must be commensurate with their education and training. That graduate PTs not yet licensed may not exclusively perform initial evaluations, reevaluations, or discharges that are the sole responsibility of physical therapists, although they may participate in portions of those activities. The board determined that they could not exclusively provide those services specifically delegated to licensees or certificate holders. The policy continues to identify that statutes do not recognize the designation SPT used in the common vernacular to identify student physical therapists. I believe at the time the board thought any initials utilized would imply to the public that there is some kind of designation or qualification to that individual, which is not the case for students. They simply are in clinics because they are during participating in clinical practice periods. So although students do tend to designate themselves as SPTs, that is not a legal designation in Arizona. Graduates must designate themselves as a graduate physical therapist or as assistive personnel. And any notes entered by these graduate unlicensed PTs or PT assistants would need to be co-signed by their supervising physical therapists. And of course, graduate PTs not yet licensed cannot supervise anybody. The supervising physical therapist in this substantive policy statement from 2006 is responsible for doing all of the things identified in statute. But within the substantive policy statement, the board interpret that the supervising physical therapist has to document the clinical rationale for utilizing assistive personnel. They don't indicate how that should be done. How we see it done in the records we review, of course, there's a broad spectrum of how appropriateness of delegation is documented, but there is a substantive policy statement that says that rationale should be included in the physical therapist documentation. And it continued the interpretation that students satisfying clinical education requirements are part of the ratio of assistive personnel. So statute says, the physical therapist has to know all of these patients for whom they are delegating care. They must know the qualifications of the people providing the services. They being physical therapists, must decide on each date of service whether or not to delegate services to other personnel, and certainly supervising other individuals means accepting the responsibility for each patient receiving appropriate care by each person involved in the provision of services, and possible ramifications of not practicing or working under these legal qualifications could be grounds for discipline for substandard care in not adhering to these laws and rules, substandard care by a physical therapist assistant who exceeds the authority to perform tasks that have been appropriately delegated. Physical therapists may be found in violation of the supervision laws and rules, could be aiding and abetting an individual who is inappropriately providing services, might be working in a setting where they know inappropriate delegation or supervision is occurring, but they don't bring it to the attention of their supervisors or of the board. There's any number of laws that may be violated by inappropriate use of personnel. I would pause at this point because the remainder of these slides are I utilize in a teaching setting to just open up to the group some discussion of how these laws might be interpreted in real life scenarios. They could be included in a self-contained PowerPoint module on the board's statutes and rules, in which it would require double clicking. The first click on the slide presents the situation. It would allow them some time to think about it. Second click would provide interpretations or the answers to these situations as contained in statutes or rules. Whether the board wants to sit through 10 minutes of these or not, it's up to you. It's your board meeting. I've probably reached my 30 minutes. So we can conclude here with a module or go through the remaining slides.
I'm good with the rest of the slides. I don't know about everyone else.
Oh, the silent minority? All right, we'll go through these quickly. So, what is the maximum number of persons a physical therapist can supervise? Of course, it depends. Three people if one is a PT assistant, only two if there are no PT assistants in the mix, only two PT assistants under general supervision, and everybody else is included in the ratio. Who can supervise? Can a PT assistant supervise aides or PT assistant students fulfilling supervised clinical practice requirements? And certainly law says no. Only the PT can supervise anyone. Although PT assistants can certainly serve as clinical instructors for PT assistant students working in a clinic under clinical education situations, they are not considered to be the supervisor of that PT assistant student.
Hey, can you go back to the previous slide, please?
Sure. This one?
Yes.
Lucio? Yep. You want me to re-talk through the slide?
Well, I'm just wondering if when you say supervision, if it would be helpful at all to describe if it's I guess I'm wondering if it could be more of a, if it could then make its way into two separate questions, if you make one a general and one a on-site. It's lovely as it is, but I'm not sure if you're searching for questions or not, but this might be a way to make two questions out of one concept if you're interested.
And I think it's a good distinction, because clearly what's happening when you're on site is very different than general, and the kinds of questions that people ask are different. So I think there could be value in describing the ratio both from on site and general.
Right. And I see you have it under bullet point four, but I didn't know if you were looking for more questions. Yeah. I love this idea, and I thank you for putting the time into it. And now we'll be quiet and listen.
Okay. Or ask other questions. I always improve. As Karen wonders why I change my PowerPoints every time I present, and it's because I keep thinking of better ways to do it. So who can supervise? Can a PTA assistant supervise PTA students? We've really talked about that. No, they can work with them, but they're not considered the supervisor of any students. Does the law include a list of what PTs can delegate to PT assistants, students, or others? And of course, we've talked about that. No, there's no lists of tasks or procedures. That's where professional judgment comes in.
Can I just, another clarifying question. But doesn't the law delegate certain things that cannot be delegated?
No. I would say the only things that can't be delegated would be initial evals, revals, discharge summaries.
Evals.
Say that again.
I was just basically echoing your sentiments, which was initial evals, progress reports, and dry needling. And although I've not, on my tenure at the board, seen a dry needling case, I have seen a few cases where the someone other than the PT is doing the initial evaluation or the progress report. And so I wonder if people have an awareness that that's explicitly stated in statute and rules.
That's a really good question. Karen, I'm not as familiar with the qualifications for performing dry needling, but it seems like that's...
That, I think, is a policy statement.
No, I believe it is actually in our statute that only a physical therapist can perform dry needling. I'll look that up, and I'm positive that the statutes limit that only exclusive, that intervention exclusively to the physical therapy.
I think you're right, Karen. I'm not looking at it.
I'm going to throw this out. I'd also like to expand on this because I had to contact Karen about this. I was working and a PT asked a tech to take out the dry needling needles. And so I basically told him that she wasn't allowed to, and only someone who had been trained in dry needling was allowed to. So, I mean, I couldn't, the other PTs couldn't. So that, and his response was, well, they didn't tell us that dry needling course. And I said, well, I don't make the rules.
Okay, so because the law states that this intervention should only be done by a person who meets qualifications, and the only people who can meet that qualifications are physical therapists, only a physical therapist can engage in the intervention of dry needling.
Karen, it's Kelly. Just to expand on things like this, we've certainly heard some things about high velocity thrust manipulation being delegated to personnel other than the physical therapist. Yet it sounds like in Peggy's training, if they've been trained and the therapist can justify the rationale in delegating that intervention to someone not a physical therapist, that is okay.
According to statute, the minimum standard would be that a PT can delegate anything to anyone as long as they deem that person they delegated to can do it safe, efficiently, and effectively. So the answer to your question by law is yes, they could, but then the onus is are they truly educated and trained to perform such a task that requires constant evaluation when it's performed, right? So that would become the decision of the board when a case like that comes forward. But there is no statute or rule that says they could not delegate it. But the responsibility and the liability and the onus of it is on the physical therapist.
So then that leads me to thinking about being mindful of using the terms not within your scope of practice to a PTA if the PT has trained and delegated this skill to this PTA. Is it then within their scope of practice if they've had training and it was delegated to them? So it's such a gray area, I know, but.
It would be up to the physical therapist to be able to prove to the board that delegated intervention, that individual was trained to perform. So the onus still falls to the physical therapist to demonstrate the competency in whatever way. And then the board would determine whether they believe that is adequate competency.
Thank you.
Situation verifying qualifications. How can a PT verify the qualifications of assisted personnel prior to making delegation decisions? Well, of course, that's one of those gray areas. The law doesn't tell you how you're supposed to determine that in order to know the qualifications of personnel, but you are expected to know their qualifications and know that they're an appropriate individual to be providing the service. How can the supervising PT ensure that a PT assistant working under general supervision has completed 2,000 hours? It's a fair question since the board doesn't record that information. They do record dry needling qualifications for physical therapists, but there is no recording that the board does about when a PT assistant has obtained 2,000 hours of experience under on-site supervision. So the law is silent how to do it. I suggest in my class might be affidavits from employers or supervisors, a work history, any other documentation that relates to having worked approximately a year under on-site supervision, but the law doesn't tell you how to do that. General supervision. Can a PT provide general supervision for a PT assistant on his or her day off? And clearly that's something that's come before the board. Can they? Well, I suppose they'd have to consider their availability. Could they go to the location that the PTA is providing services within 15 minutes? Can they respond within 15 minutes? Can they go within the same day? And availability. Can you determine patient acuity and have the discussion authorizing that PT assistant to go ahead and treat the patient, which must be done each date of service, based on patient acuity if you're having a day off. If you're willing to assume those qualifications to your day off, I suppose, it could be done. Certainly only a PT assistant could be working under general supervision, so it wouldn't pertain to services provided by anybody else. Can a PT have assistive personnel initiate patient care before they arrive? And you've seen this in many cases that have come before you. Aides and students can only work under on-site supervision, which means no. Aides, students, other assistive personnel, they must wait for a physical therapist to be present. A PT assistant working under circumstances where the PT is yet to arrive to the clinic could potentially initiate patient treatments if the physical therapist had confirmed acuity and determined that the PT assistant should start that service. I know it sounds convoluted, but it's kind of how I see it. Evaluations and discharges. Can a PT delegate evals, revals, or discharge to PT students or PT assistants? And clearly, the law says no go on those. A graduate PT, not yet licensed, could perform portions of an initial evaluation or discharge, but the law says exclusive to licensed PTs. The weekend staff in an inpatient setting consists of 5 per diem PTs and 1 staff PT assistant in the clinic on that day. Who supervises the PT assistant? And in a class, this would at least initiate some discussion about circumstances the individuals in the class have experienced. But the point of fact is that any of those per diem physical therapists, unfamiliar with the patients, right? They're that day. They're not staff therapists. Any of them could serve as the supervisor. It just depends on who is willing to accept responsibility for the patients that the PT assistant would be treating. So any of them could qualify, but someone has to be designated for each patient so the PT assistant knows whom to speak with as it relates to the patients the PT assistants are working with. Someone has to be responsible. Can a PT fulfill that 4th visit 30-day requirement when patients are being treated by physical therapist assistants under general supervision? Could they just document care without actually seeing the patient? Could they fulfill that fourth visit 30-day requirement without actually seeing the patient? And since the law requires all of the services provided that fourth visit be provided by the physical therapist, then no, they couldn't provide that fourth visit unless they were physically with the patient. How can a PT determine appropriateness of delegation of tasks when it's the rehab manager in the clinic who sets the patient's schedule and determines who's going to be on the PTA schedule and who's going to be on the PT schedule? And once again, we have to fall back on gray areas. The law requires the supervising PT to make those decisions. Doesn't say how the decision is made, but it would indicate that even if a list of patients assigned to a PT assistant is physically written by a clinic manager or someone else, that supervising physical therapist is still going to be responsible for those patients on the PT assistant schedule. And they're responsible for making sure that the clinic personnel understands that ultimately the decision of who's treated by that PT assistant is going to be made by the PT, even if they have a schedule that's been written down or determined by someone else. Bottom line, supervising physical therapists have to be prepared to defend their delegation decisions and to accept responsibility for all of those patients. And that means I can stop sharing the PowerPoint. And that means the power goes back to Karen. Thank you, by the way. Love this discussion.
Thank you, Peggy.
Are there any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to stop this recording so that we have just this presentation, and then we'll restart. We're stopping the recording at 11:11.